down to brass tacks. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Ellis. How are you doing?
I'm well, and you?
I wish I could say I was on top of the world, but, you know, the effects of a cold and all that.
Wow.
But more important, I'm feeling more impacted by a sad state of affairs that is enveloping our society. We're over the last year, we've had at least three juveniles being charged with capital offences in our society, and over the last 2 years, no less than 12 persons between the ages of under 18 being charged with capital offences. And I hold my belly, just like perhaps parents of these children would, but I cry for my society, because we really have reached an ebb that I don't know what's next. We ask ourselves, what's next? But before asking what's next, I think we need to look at what is. And I mean, there's been lots of conjecture as to what has taken place. I think we have lived through it. We have seen the decline. We have seen the slide, and the resolve to do something. I think if we don't do something now, we will never do anything.
But what is that something? What is it?
We live in a society, and we need to do a comparative analysis. We understand the dynamics of criminal behavior and what drives it. But I think the agencies charged with interventions, at one time there was an emphasis on empowering social workers who worked from the community, welfare, probation officers, and community development officers had a synergistic relationship where they sought to devise programs in at-risk communities. And there was some success in diverting young persons back to socially accepted behavior. Decisions were taken, political decisions, whatever decisions were taken, and the best interests of these at-risk youth and their aspirations for a better life was not served well in those circumstances. So I think we have, over time, failed to capitalize on what works and sacrifice it on the altar of cost effectiveness.
Well,
and those kind of things.
I have a view to share with you. I don't know if you may agree or disagree with it, but I suspect that part of the problem is that we are going for the so-called at-risk youth. If we begin from the premise that all youth are at risk, perhaps we would be doing a better job of trying to confront it, which is that before you see the manifestations of the behavior, you start to inculcate in the minds of people a certain way of life, a certain way of interacting with each other, and a certain way of looking at self that will ultimately help to steer people away from becoming the so-called at-risk youth that you talk about. You see, my judgment is that we are trying to tackle that problem when the horse is already out of the stable. And there is an assumption that everybody else is okay, except for this handful of people who become the at-risk youth. Now, every stratum of Barbadian society, you have potential for problems. Don't fool yourself. There are people in this country who are people of means who cannot control their children and have all sorts of problems. Some of them take them and send them abroad so that they don't reflect the embarrassment to them in a direct way. But wherever they are still an embarrassment. And that is so for people at the bottom and people at the middle and people at the top. It is simply that our society does not know how to deal with it. We just don't know. Your thoughts?
I agree. There are youth and that cohort of adolescents and even preteen. There is it can be volatile depending on what the youth is exposed to. I'm saying though that comparatively, the traditional values that perhaps would have taken prominence in the 80s, 70s, 80s, early 90s have been eroded. And the systems that allow for, the community involvement, the church's influence back then, the sense to which there was a building of a community that allowed for adults to interact with teens, the sports clubs, the service clubs.
So let's accept that as a given. So where do we go from here?
So my point is that there must be strategic partnerships evolving to fix the situation. I believe we have the resources. I believe we have the we have an understanding of what needs to be done, but the will to do it, perhaps we need to be forceful, more forceful in making it happen.
And what is it that needs to be taught and how?
I can only think about what informs my experience. Now, there are other models in North American inner cities where parents, I'm talking about working parents, volunteer in community-based programs. They after work, they go into programs which are funded by the business sector, funded by government agencies, and they actually supervise programs, get involved, mentorship, get involved with working with at-risk youth. It is seen as, they can get tax breaks and that kind of thing, but apart from that, they see a vested interest in creating a safer communities for their children to grow up in by giving that time. All right, we have lots of opportunity. We got community centers all over Barbados. I mean, we did the community technology program successfully, but I'm saying that at this juncture where we have a serious erosion of social behavior, we need to take back our communities by people who live in the communities having a vested interest in what takes place in the community and not allowing the particular personality who recruits these young at-risk youth and sets them up to go about shooting up the place. We have to take back our communities. And the fact is that lots of persons are related and they can speak to, they can mitigate the fallout by being more forceful and not allowing themselves to be part of the pay packet which comes from these persons who are up to nefarious activity. So I'm saying that there must be, I know that social morals and mores are eroding, but that does not mean that there's not a remnant of people who have enough guts and balls to say enough is enough. We're going to do what is necessary to fight back and to have a safer community for us to live in or our children to inherit. We need these programs. I'm saying that the agencies charged with the juvenile interventions, a lot of them are in turmoil, and I think that the government owes us the right to intervene and to look and see what has been happening, what has taken place, why these departments are not functioning the way they are, and why lots of the juveniles are graduating from probation and JAS to becoming hardcore criminals. We need to a serious assessment needs to be made of that. And I think that's part of the problem.
I think that I would support the development of a national mentorship program in Barbados. The essence of the mentorship program would be that people would be encouraged to be exposed to training in mentorship. Mm-hmm. Because the great weakness that we have here is that there are many people who are willing, but they do not have the skills to do it. And if you don't have the skills, you are going to feel that you are vulnerable going out there into communities, trying to interact with people on a hit or miss basis. All right?
Right.
So we have to determine what will be the essential elements of that program. Mm-hmm. It is quite possible. And I mean, there are people who will tell you that the concept of emotional intelligence is central to all of that. All right? Understanding psychology is central to all of that. So that what we have is the development of basically a community-based army of mentors that mm-hmm. will then be able to interface and interact with those people out there at every level. Because, you see, you have to start with the child before it starts to give trouble.
Right, of course, of course.
That's where a lot, yeah. That's where we are falling down. We mm-hmm. feel to a large extent that everybody else is okay except for the person who is starting to show you that they've gone off the rails.
But David, I do concur. The reality is, though, that somebody don't just wake up and go and shoot somebody. There's a route to that behavior. There's a route that predisposes them to going down that track. And we have to zero in on these manifestation problems early. And I agree with you that training and emotional intelligence and the other areas is important, there are programs that we can adapt for have been successful in other jurisdictions that can be adapted here. And it does not take, I volunteer in programs in Canada, there's no mass degree of training, you know. It's simply there is some training, yes, but it is the will and the understanding that spending time building relationships with these youth, making them accountable for their behavior, showing care in them, showing interest in them, helping them with in terms of giving them your means, I mean, time, importantly, but helping them to navigate some of the challenges that they face because of parents who are perhaps too busy to care for them. That is important, and I think that we can have an impact on our young people, vulnerable youth, by spending quality time in terms of helping them to navigate some of the challenges that they face in their communities. It is not so difficult to do, and I don't think that we should look at what we can or why we make ourselves vulnerable. Our society has become vulnerable as a result of this state of affairs, and we need to take back our communities,
yes,
by not being bullied by a volatile few who want to hold us up to ransom.
But you see, a lot of those people, you must recognize that a lot of those people also feel that nobody cares about them, and therefore they don't care about anybody.
That's true.
So how is the society going to say to them, you're wrong, we do care?
Right.
We do care. I mean, it begins, yes, within many of the households and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And we cannot easily take the place of mother or father or both.
We can't. But David, I'm saying that spending, that being there, being present, being in the community, showing, going in for the long haul. We can't. This state of affairs is not going to take. It has not just got here. It has happened. It's, you know, over time, it has descended to this point. And I'm saying that recognizing what we need to do, it will be a long haul. It will be a long fight in terms of turning it around.
Well,
but we have to be confident and committed to the
task. There are other aspects of behavior in this society that mm-hmm. help to create that monster. I mean, my colleagues and I have been discussing what are we going to do on Sunday coming for brass tacks. And the discussion has taken us in the direction of looking at how poor people are treated when they go for help from various people in this country, from government. Let me make the point. From government to other interests in the country. And we say to you that is at the core of the poor service that everybody else gets.
So David, my point is that if a careful examination is not given, an inventory done in how agencies particularly charged with dealing with juvenile delinquents, if that is not done, then we will continue to
But it begins with
monsters.
How you treat everybody. If you,
That's
you,
true.
You can't begin by saying it is only this guy I'm going to treat well. You treat it, you got to treat everybody well.
But government has a responsibility to everybody, but particularly
we have a responsibility to ourselves. This thing
That's
that
true.
You are coming to me with the government all the time, I don't buy that.
I'm talking about how agencies charged with responsibility. That's the mandate.
No, the mandate is, it goes beyond that. And from where I sit, look, it is how we treat each other every day. So whether you work, look, you leave your community hostile to your neighbor, right? You go
mm-hmm.
to work. Whether you work in private or public sector, you go to work and you show that hostility to whoever you meet. All right? But the person who is poor and has nothing gets it even worse, because underlying all of that is a notion that you are nobody, you wasted your time, you had opportunities and you frittered them away, and therefore I am going to treat you the way that I'm going to treat you today. Take it or leave it.
Right.
All right? So what I'm saying to you is don't look at it only in the context of how the government agencies treat people. Look at it from the point of view of how we as a people, where we have gone and what is required to take us to the next level. I feel very strongly that I watched the statistics coming from the government on Wednesday or so when we went to the Chamber of Commerce luncheon. The figures and the chart in particular on productivity in Barbados is frightening. It has shown productivity declining for a long time. And a part of that has to do with our national attitude and the extent to which we are constantly pointing the accusing finger at everybody else rather than taking the responsibility that is ours to help improve that. And I doubt that it is going to improve merely by telling people you need to improve. So what can be put in place? These are all linked, don't you think?
Of course. Yeah, there's a correlation between, you know, how these things interplay with one another. But I think critically, the government is charged with strategically developing policy to treat these situations. And while they inherited a position, they inherited situations, and they're doing their best. I'm talking successive governments, right? The reality is though that our circumstance as it is today, we are facing crisis. And I think it behoves us, therefore, to look at how those charged with intervening have done what they've done before, how they've been functioning, and take stock in terms of how we can turn it around.
I want to say that if we continue thinking like that, we are going to go nowhere. Why did we set up a tripartite relationship? Why was it that at one stage, other countries in the world were saying that Barbados was setting a trend? Because it is about bringing government,
right,
workers,
labor,
and private sector together. Sure. What is the role of labor and what is the role of private sector in helping us tackle this problem?
But David, you remember I pointed to you that in another jurisdiction, the private sector funds these programs, so there is an understanding that they have a commitment to funding some of their profits back into these communities. That is the type of relationship that needs to be manifested here.
I don't believe uh-huh. that we should foster this notion that the only contribution that private sector must give is by putting money behind something. That's like a man putting money on the table and say, run the house.
But
you know, you got that other input?
They put in the money where the mouth is. And that speaks to a commitment to go beyond the talk. Where you going to channel your money into securing an opportunity for those who are marginalized?
All I'm saying to you, sir, and you and I are generally speaking on the same wavelength about the objective. How we are trying to get there, we may differ on that. But I'm saying to you, the point that you have raised may well be a manifestation of all those other weaknesses that exist within our society.
Yeah, right. There's no one else to answer. I agree on that. But I you know, obviously we will choose those which you know our minds are informed by.
Yeah. But we are concerned. We are equally concerned about that. But we are looking at it from the point of view of tracing it to other things that are not as obvious. You see, because we are a crisis-driven society. That's how Barbados is.
It's time to push past that. We definitely have to push past that and really be proactive in making things happen and averting these type of
and
situations.
Stop and think about it this way.
Right. So your Sunday program, you say, is going to be...
This Sunday, we've set about trying to look at this whole question of how we are treating each other, especially the poor, and what is it that is at the core of this behavior? Where is it taking us? And why are we behaving in this way to one another? That is really what we are trying to examine. How widespread is it? And what pain does it impact, does it bring to the people who are on the front line of it? Those who give and those who receive. All right? and Sanka Price is going to be the moderator for that program. Down to Brass Tacks, good morning.
Hello, good morning, David.
Yes, welcome.
David John Goddard.
Yes, sir.
Thanks for allowing me on the program. There are a couple of points I want to make, David. I think most people who read anything I write know that I have never been a supporter of the BART program. I always felt that it places a proportionately larger burden on the poor, and that we were going to see an increase in poverty in the country before we can see any turnaround. I have never bought the view, which I know you probably support, that the country was on a precipice, and that if we didn't go to the IMF and do all these draconian things, the dollar would be devalued, and all those scary things I heard. I never believed them.
You believe it? Did you have any? No.
Go ahead.
You have all your talk and thing, but let me ask you this: Did you check the foreign reserves at any stage?
Yeah, David. Yes. Let me answer that.
Mm-hmm.
David, we went in 1991, was it? The foreign reserves that morning, a few days gone thing.
And what did we do then?
We went to IMF, but a completely different kind of program.
What did we do?
We sent home workers.
We reformed NIS.
Yes.
I mean, we did. We had the cuts. Don't forget.
Yeah, David. I go again. I have never. If you read what I've written, I have always said that this business of sending home people at the lower end of the working population is silly and short-sighted.
Mr. Goddard.
And it does not. Let me say this, isn't it? It does not do anything.
Mr. Goddard, I want to tell you that I'm prepared to listen to all the things that you say are wrong about these programs. Mm-hmm. But I ain't hear you come with an alternative that anybody considered to be viable.
David, that is not true. I don't know if you read anything. Right.
What? Which economists endorse your program?
Well, you see, that is the whole problem in Barbados. We have this idea that unless some economist who has a lot of theory but no practice, never practice nothing, who has this
blind theory. Which accountant or financier endorse your program?
But David, listen to what I'm saying. I am not saying that you don't have to take action to deal with economic problems. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that. All I am saying is that I noticed that we like the low-hanging fruit. And the low-hanging fruit, refer here to all of the mayors and janitors and so on in the public service who we think we should send home. And I'm saying, David, that you cannot solve an economic problem like that because they don't work for enough money to make any impact.
Well, you are not being as thorough in assessing this particular program and its impact, because this program also touched the commercial banks. This program also touched people who had government bonds and that sort of thing. So it wasn't just the small people who got hit.
But David, it hurt a lot of pensioners who had bought the bonds.
But do you accept that it also hit people who were considered big ups?
The banks got back the money by overcharging us. Look,
do you accept that it hit people who were big ups who had money?
Like who? They got breaks. They got back. They got back.
The people with the people who had the government bonds, what they got back?
I support them. I have written in support of the people who got government because.
What was your alternative plan? No, I ain't got the whole day, so I want to hear what was your alternative plan. Don't worry, I am the moderator today, so go. There are times you call me and you get a lot of time. I know that you have a lot to say, so let me. Having established that this program failed because it hit the poor, having established that the previous program failed for the same reason. I want to hear what is the alternative program that you had put in place, or you proposed that we put in place.
David, the first thing is, you see, prevention is better than cure. The first problem in Barbados is that we have encouraged successive governments to pad the public service list with workers just before an election, and then after the election we run into trouble.
Man, that's past tense.
No, David, don't tell me it's bastard because we didn't.
That ain't got nothing to do with what program you were going to put in place.
As a journalist, you should.
Past tense.
Right now, you should recognize what is happening and speak out against it.
I recognize it ever since. People were talking about that for years. Now, having established that is what happened, what was your program?
Okay, David. All right. If you are going to lay off people to save government revenue and all that, it has to come from the top of the thing. It can't come from the people at the bottom that can't afford anything. You send home people to house. Look, this morning, David, I went down to 6 hours and it's becoming an increasing habit. A fella, I felt real hurt. See, a 30-somebody-year-old fella begged me for $2 to buy something to eat. I am saying to you that poverty in Barbados is now at an all-time high. We don't want to accept it because what we like a lot of arithmetic.
Mr. Goddard, I want to tell you that I have followed your contributions on this economy and on the political environment in Barbados long before 2008.
Yes, and I have all.
And you have consistently taken one line. Understood? You agree?
Right. So you're fine. You want
now, having let me hear solutions.
Let me hear solutions. I told you that if you must cut because you have been negligent in running the economy, both parties, if you're going to cut first of all from the big up salaries that you have in the public service. The ministers should accept a reduction in their allowances. You should cut per diems, cut some of these missions that waste a lot of people's time because they don't do anything. All these lot of missions abroad that we pretend are bringing this business to Barbados, and I don't ever see it. You can reduce the staff at those, reduce per diems, reduce ministerial salaries. The top part of the public service can do with a reduction in the allowances, these entertainment allowances, and all these. They will save the country far more money.
How much?
I am not an economist who rock with the figures, but I
you
know.
You see why I tell you?
I see Michael Howard.
You see why I tell you? You can't come with an argument like this and then tell me you don't got the specifics.
David, you're being unfair.
I am not.
Well, even the government couldn't get the figures.
I am not. You know, I am sitting down here, so looking at some statistics here, talking about how the national debt skyrocketed. Yes. How would you have dealt with the national debt?
David.
Your plan of action, what did it propose to do for the national debt?
The national debt we have?
Yeah.
David, it certainly would not be to default on the national debt met Barbados.
What would you have done?
We know we look like a state like these. You know, we look like some of those countries.
Oh,
that
my
are
goodness.
State. We walk in both the place and posing and showing up, but we got to tell you, foreign reserves. And all this.
Look, I am not here to prevent a viable idea from coming to the fore and discussing it. Okay? At the end of the day, I gain nothing by suppressing ideas.
I know
the
that.
The whole rationale for a program like this is to let all views contend.
That's what I call you.
But having said that, I mean, if you are going to at any stage say the program is not working, fine. You can say that and say why it is not working. The alternative is also important.
Yes,
and you have to, and you can't just come and pelt anything for the table.
I just told you where the cut should have come. Mm. And I'm saying to you, the cut should have come there. Clearly, you have to reduce expenditure. I accept that. You have to, all these transfer to the...
But Mr. Goddard, would you concede that one of the biggest problems we had revolved around the national debt?
Yes.
You say to me that you would never have defaulted on the debt.
Right.
Now, if the national debt was at 176% of gross domestic product by the end of 2017,
mm-hmm.
The government's approach has been one in which it has moved to lower that particular percentage considerably so far, and to get what it describes as the elbow room because 65 cents out of every dollar was going to pay debt. Now, how would you have addressed it, if David, not by way of default?
David, are there any other countries in the world that had high national debt?
You tell me.
I'm telling you.
You tell me how you would have dealt with it.
Countries in the world defaulting on debt.
But how would...
I tell you, look, a failed state.
How would you go... You ain't telling me how you're going to fix it?
I'm going to tell you. I'm saying, even as we defaulted, the debt ain't gone away, you know. We just kicked the can down the road. That's all we have done. But we're fooling ourselves that we have defaulted, so the debt look low now, boy, against GDP.
But you know, we can't carry this conversation much further. Because basically, this is a conversation that's essentially saying, this has failed. I had an idea that would be more successful, but I ain't got no details on this idea. What I'm good at doing, though, is saying that it has failed.
No, David, you were afraid, though. I gave you some examples of things you should have done.
Nothing of any substance.
You haven't
given me anything of substance to work with, and I'm ready to listen to you.
But David, the program concentrated a lot on cutting jobs and that type of thing. And I show you how you should have cut the expense I'm talking about.
But you could not say to me to what extent that would have been able to get the money that was required.
David,
you don't have figures. You just pie in the sky.
You know full well that if I cutting grumbling and things... from the public service cannot amount to anything near what you would cut in per diems.
John, you got to, if you come to me, you could go to anybody else with your kind of talk. If you come to me, you know I'm going to ask you for specifics because I can only deal with the specifics. You can't come and say you had an idea and just leave it at that. You got to give me more than that because... Don't forget, you've been a teacher. You've done a very good job at teaching people in this country.
Thank you.
And therefore, having done that, the most important thing that you should have done for them is to teach them how to think.
Yes. Listen, David, you hear Simon Nathan? I taught him.
All right, then. And he raised relevant questions. But you should get him to help you fashion that program that you said that you developed. All right?
I
can't
count
for
you too.
All right. Have a good day. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Hello?
Good morning, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, welcome.
There are two things I want to discuss with you this morning.
Yes.
First one, I sit down here hearing a lot of armchair fire serviceman and this and the next.
Armchair fire. The man was not an armchair fire serviceman. The man fought fires like Fogarty and Fogarty and others in Bridgetown. You know, armchair fireman.
Yeah. Wait till I finish and then respond.
But I can't let you dismiss the man as an armchair fireman.
I think about that. Listen, in 2003, Lady Paul sent myself along with six of us to Texas A&M University on a fire course, which was very, very, very intensive.
You went on a fire course?
I went on a fire course. I got a picture here. And say you got at Texas A&M to look for the 2003. And you
but that was to fight fires where in Light and Power?
Yeah, Light and Power, savvy there.
Right, to fight fires in Light and Power, not the light of. Fires in houses and buildings.
Listen, Miss Ellis.
Yeah.
Don't try to trivialize what I'm saying.
But tell me, you expand to me. You have to tell me what the course was all about. Tell me.
All right, listen carefully. When I came back, I brought back all the literature that I could have gathered and I gave to a Mr. Clark at the Barbies for a service. And when he saw me, he said, well, listen, we don't know about these. We don't know about these. Incidentally, the day after we land back in Barbados, there was a fire on the turbine at Lighting Power. And the supervisor said, trip off the turbine. And I said, no, don't trip the turbine. Don't trip it. That's metal don't burn. That's lagging. And the same time, a gentleman by the name of Mr. George Ennis, who was the chief fire officer at the time, he was an engineer. He was coming up the stairs, and he looked at me, he said, Donald, if you'd have went to Texas to die for a training, you would never know about that.
So you have said that to say what, Daniel?
I say that to say that a lot of people discussing this fair thing, and they don't have no experience.
And what about you? You got the experience. Let me hear what your conclusion is then.
But no, I have nothing to say about it.
Oh, I see. This is all you've come to say. You endorse the government's decision.
Because
whatever the government does is well done for you.
No. I got two things to say.
Why are you endorsing it?
I am endorsing it because we have elected members to do a job for the country. And in some people's opinion, they're doing wrong. And some opinion, they're doing right. And in my opinion, they're doing right for the country.
All right, then. So you realize what has happened here. You have come to support a position, not based on anything to do with that specific decision, but more because you endorse the government's the government as a whole. And therefore, whatever the government does, you feel confident.
No, I don't understand that, Mr. Ellis.
But that's how it comes across to me.
I know you would say that. But when I finish doing my second point now, I know you're going to pay me no more. Mr. Ellis, what is the purpose of a land tax?
For the government to collect revenue.
Government to collect revenue and then tell the property of your land your building, huh?
And then do what?
To give you an idea of your land and the building you have, what it costs, huh?
Well, you don't forget, sometimes what the government gives us, the land tax value, the valuation, is not what the market says. So sometimes you can get one thing for the government pitching at, let's say, you pay $4,000 or let's say $2,000 per year for land tax. But when you go to the market values it at more, or sometimes it can perhaps value it. Well, generally, it values it at more. It doesn't value less.
But my reason for answering this question is, if the government values your place at 10 cents, I would say, no, man, it's only 5 cents, and you paid your land tax on 5 cents. Why, when it is time now for sale now, that you want to say it worth 50 cents?
Well, but in those...
all you are paying was 5 cents. All the years you paid 5 cents.
That's, morally, it is clear how it looks.
Mm-hmm.
In those circumstances, you go to court. Let the court determine who is right and who is wrong on that score. That's what you're doing.
Suppose now that is hindering progress of the country.
Yeah, but
we had an audit court.
What are you saying? That you really should do as you like as a government?
No, I'm not saying do as you like.
You know, the government is supposed to follow the rule of law. Because it hinders development, it does not mean that you should do as you like. Because we've had to deal with that before, and I hope that is not the way that you suggest that the government should deal with affairs in a country.
If the land tax is X, I am an administrator. I can value your land as X, according to what you are paying. And I will put your money there in an escrow or put it on the bank. And if you want it, if you want the price, they like stop there, let the interest market fund to get what you want. My God, I got to do what I have to do. And that's what the government should do with this thing I said today, paper. And the other one,
that's
trying to hold up progress.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Down to brass tacks. Let me be clearer. We have so many different views that come before us here on the call-in program. And it is not in our interest at all to try to stop people from sharing alternative views on anything at all that comes before us. At the end of the day, whatever view you have has to be backed up by information that supports the view, because we cannot run away from factual information, whatever it may be. So I come into contact with some observations from people, and I'm clear why some people believe one minute you're supporting the government, next minute you're bashing the government, one minute you're supporting the DLP, the next minute you're criticizing the DLP. Because that's the nature of the thing. You know, you can't, if you don't want to sit down here and consistently back one thing or the other, you go with the flow. And if I ask you to provide me with information to support your position, it is all in the goal of trying to make sure that people who listen to this program get the best possible information on which they can make up their minds on this thing or the other. And I regret to say that we are at a stage in this country where, unfortunately, there are too many people who have moved away or have never been in sync with the concept of trying to be fair and trying to be balanced in the media. I do not know where we have gone wrong, but I mean, sometimes I query the kind of teaching that has taken place at the tertiary level in this country, where I have noticed that there are too many people who are at a particular level in society who do not honor and respect that aspect of what the media is supposed to be about. But things change. There's one thing I'm telling you all, you ain't gonna change me. This is how I have always been, and this is how I will always be in dealing with public affairs in this country. So those of you who come on the chat and talk elsewhere about this bias thing, that's up to you, but you're not going to influence me to behave any differently. That is how we were taught to do this business, and this is how we will continue to do it. If you want to criticize the government, you are free to do so. Just produce the evidence. If you want to criticize the Democratic Labour Party, you are also free to do so, but provide the evidence as well. This is Down to Brass Tacks. You're on the air. Hello?
Peace be unto you, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, welcome
to
the program.
I want to wish you a blessed, healthy, and prosperous new year. May God's guidance continue to be with you and be the staff. And I want to tell Mr. Oh, dear Lord. I'm not a sir. Mr. Johnson, I'm not a sir. I am a ma'am and all women. Anyhow, okay. I have a few points to make.
My apologies.
First, you were speaking about the elderly, and you were speaking about good service. There is a gentleman who, because along with my mom and my stepdad, I had a scare, so I had to attend the hospital often, and I had a lot of tests to be done. And there's a gentleman there by the name of Mr. Holt, who takes blood from us. And Mr. Ellis, I want to tell you, I tip my hat off to that gentleman. You see, he don't like publicity, but you give honor where honor due. He comes in time to accommodate those persons who have to go to work for 8 o'clock, and I admire him for that. And I hope, I'm more sure he's from St. Joseph, and I hope when the gathering get to St. Joseph that they will look upon this gentleman because he's a human being, and he loves humanity.
Well, thanks for drawing it to national attention.
My other point, I have something for him, but he said he don't want the publicity. I travel with it. I went and I got it done, and I travel with it, and I hope I'll be able to give him that everybody can see because he deserves it. And
how
a lot
many,
of people always speak of him.
How many years have you been seeing him operate like this?
A while. And I've been going to the hospital now for the past 4 years with myself.
What makes him special?
Because, as I told you, he come there early to accommodate persons who have to go to work for 8 o'clock.
Okay.
You know, and that is very good. And for those diabetics who have, you know, sometimes you got a whole day, or rather a whole night, and you have to take 2 blood tests, so he accommodate that he could get one, get something, and come back again.
How early is early?
Early.
7
early,
o'clock?
Early, very early.
7 o'clock?
Six thirty. Yeah, sometimes he even catch the bus. Sometimes he have to catch the bus and he comes. And
but
I
what
really
makes you what makes you think that he is doing that all on his own and that it is not the start of his shift?
No, it's not. I don't think it's out of issue. Why, when we talk to you, all you all is trying to put things in normal.
No. Isn't that? It is quite possible that it could be the start of a shift as well. But, you know, look, you're saying let's respect the fact that this man is doing something extraordinary for us. And I am not going to beat that down. But I'm saying to you that it is quite possible that it may be the start of a shift. If it is not the start of a shift and he would normally start at 8 o'clock and comes at 6 o'clock to help you, then your point is confirmed. This is not to try, I'm not here trying to knock the good words that you are putting on his behalf out of your mouth, but to just establish whether the praise that you are heaping on him is really deserved. And if it is well deserved, surely I will endorse it. This is Down to Brass Tacks.